So good morning, everyone. I am very pleased and honored that you all are interested in my opinion and that I get the floor here to give you all my opinion and talk. So anyway, as Kate said, I work over at the Women's Birth and Wellness Center. We are at this point the only freestanding birth center in the state. We're delivering more than 400 babies a year now. We function as a nonprofit. We were started in 1995 by Maureen Darcy, who's still our director. At that point, we were known as the Piedmont Community Health Center. Family medicine at UNC is our medical backup. We have admitting privileges there, and OB is always graciously willing to step in and step up if things are not going according to plan. At the birth center, we have many of the same things that you have at the hospital. We have medications and IVs and antibiotics and emergency equipment. What we don't have is a NICU or an OR or anesthesia or that nice little red emergency button on the wall, the one next to the baby warmer, that you can push when things are going south and all your competent colleagues come in to help you with whatever emergency that you're having. So clinical decision-making feels very, very different practicing out of hospital than it ever did in the hospital. It feels profoundly both autonomous, mostly in a good way, but also very responsible for the health and safety of mom and baby. Prior to working at the birth center, I worked in an FQHC public health clinic in Florida and also private practice. The culture of medicine is very different there, I think, unfortunately, mostly due to the medical malpractice situation. It seemed we had a plethora of med mal attorneys. There were billboards on the highway, ads on the radio, on the TV, everywhere you look. And it really has led to a culture of fear and some very defensive and interventive practice. And I'm happy to say that that is not what I've experienced at the birth center, but even when I'm up at the hospital, I feel that patients' decisions are respected and people are doing their best to practice the art of medicine. So at the birth center, we're doing – actually, Kate, you can advance. I wonder if I can advance. Nope, you got it. Okay. At the birth center, we're doing a really good job of getting our babies born vaginally, and I wanted to share with you my perspective and some of the things that I think we're doing that are making a difference. So we're going to go sort of from the forest to the trees here. So in the big picture, our moms are highly, highly motivated to have a vaginal birth without intervention. They've chosen not to deliver in a hospital. I'm going to argue that our patients are inherently different somewhere in the core of their being from a similar woman who might choose to give birth in the hospital. She attends her 12-week Bradley childbirth education classes. She takes notes. She practices. And she comes to you on the labor unit with her 4-page single-space birth plan outlining everything she will and will not accept for her birth. She's still choosing to give birth in the hospital, and I do put some of that sort of responsibility on her. The expectation is set early on by both providers and of course, our moms for a vaginal birth, and C-section is seen as a last resort when all else has failed. Excuse me. We are nurse midwives. We are philosophically committed to normal birth and minimal intervention. It's what we think is the right way to care for low-risk women. We love catching babies. We think it's really fun. Our practice is set up to enable prolonged labor support with the expectation that labor will take a really long time. I feel like we set a pretty realistic expectation with our moms about what labor is going to be like, that they're training for a marathon and not a sprint. One of my favorite quotes, and I believe this is from Pam England, who authored Birthing From Within, which is a book and also a modality of childbirth education, but it reflects our attitude that labor hurts, it's hard work, and you can do it. Patient choice is respected. We participate in shared decision-making. This is so different than it was in Florida. Boy, if a mom refused an intervention or, what the recommended what was recommended by her provider, it was really our responsibility to talk her into what we thought was right. And if she didn't agree, it could turn ugly quickly. And at the end of that, after some what I thought was kind of bullying behavior, nobody was happy. You had a provider that was unhappy and a mom that felt very disrespected and dissatisfied with her care. It also takes some attitude adjustment. I'll tell you, my first year of practice, I walked around with my tail between my legs. I don't know how they put up with me. you know, those women that you meet in the course of their prenatal care that for whatever reason you're like, oh, she's not going to do it. You know, the primip at 41 and 4 with a cervix that feels about like my butcher block cutting board. The mom that you know has a giant baby in there, the 36-weeker, you know, maybe a little overweight, maybe a little puffy with creeping blood pressures. Your brain sort of takes you to where you think this is going to go, and you say, oh, let's just cut our losses. And then you're generally sort of tightly wound, negative or whiny individual who you just think is never going to be able to cut loose and give birth to a baby. Really, most of the women you think can't or won't give birth actually can and will. It is definitely an attitude adjustment. Okay, Kate. Slide, please. All right. So our protocols also facilitate vaginal birth, first of all, and of course this skews us as we only take healthy, low-risk women to give birth at the birth center. These women are so healthy. They are very motivated to take care of themselves and make good health decisions. They eat wonderful diets. These are whole foods, farmers markets kind of people. They exercise. They do yoga. Nobody smokes. We do not care for hypertensives, no pregestational diabetics. We have BMI cutoffs, no IVF patients. So really, when you take a population of healthy, low-risk women and you leave them alone, most of the time it's going to turn out okay. Our practice is evidence-based. Our clinical protocols were developed with the Department of Family Medicine at UNC. And we know that the evidence in many circumstances supports non-intervention and expectant management depending on the clinical circumstance. We do no elective inductions. Our patients don't want them. If they find out they're going to have to be induced for a medical indication, it is really, really bad news for them because it sort of signifies a failure of everything that they've hoped for their birth and everything they've worked so hard for. Inductions also are a huge strain on our practice. What it does is it takes the first call midwife out of the mix and takes her up to UNC for as long as that induction takes, 12 hours, 24 hours, 72 hours, and it's a huge strain on our practice. How you diagnose labor affects how labor is managed and also affects how you perceive labor. How much time labor is taking. We know that labor takes a really long time. We don't have a Friedman curve at the birth center. But the standard criteria for active labor, 4 to 5 centimeters dilated, effaced with regular painful contractions, we, of course, use those guidelines. But we also use the emotional criteria that a woman in active labor is working really hard. She's become inwardly focused, and it's all she can do to sort of pay attention to these contractions and get through them. Her sense of humor is gone. And we find that women sometimes don't hit this stage until much more advanced dilation, 5, 6, 7 centimeters dilated. So if she hasn't met these criteria, we don't treat her like she's in active labor. We still treat her like she's in early labor. So we'll send her out for a walk. We'll send her back home. We'll send her downtown to get some lunch, whatever, until she's more active. And these women don't precip in their cars or on the highway coming to the birth center. A few people do that, but it doesn't seem to be these women. What we find is that the process of labor has to catch up to their body. It has to catch up to their cervix. And it's worthwhile to wait. I am going to argue that active labor doesn't need much management, but early labor, prodromal labor sometimes does because it can take a really long time. We have respect, a deep, deep respect for circadian rhythms when a mom is in early and prodromal labor. If it's nighttime, she needs to be sleeping. What we don't want is for her to call us in the morning offering to send us the Excel spreadsheet of every contraction she's had since she started the night before. She should have been sleeping. So we encourage our moms to call when they start labor so that we can sort of rein them in and say, you know what, this is early. It's not time to be paying attention. You need to sleep. You need to turn the lights off, take a warm bath, put a hot pack on your tummy. If you need some Tylenol PM, that's fine. And try and get some rest. Fatigue is one of the biggest hurdles our moms face. There's no epidural for rest. There's no Pitocin augmentation. We have to balance sort of rest and energy during all phases of labor, but especially early labor when it can take hours or even days. We are pretty liberal with medication for therapeutic rest, combinations of Nubain and morphine combined with Phenergan. Even at more advanced dilations, if mom's are not in the active phase of labor, and we will utilize therapeutic rest even in circumstances where, you know, I think common practice would say, well, we need to move this along, not slow it down. So even, you know, at 42 weeks, even, you know, with prolonged ruptured membranes, even with some mildly elevated blood pressures, we sort of feel that the benefit of a couple hours of rest far outweighs any risk of prolonging the pregnancy for a couple of hours. All our moms are intermittently monitored. They have to be intermittently monitored. At the birth center, we are not allowed to use continuous monitoring. It is mortal sin. We do have a monitor. It's got to be 30 years old. It's upstairs in the office. It's used for non-stress tests only. So the thinking is, you know, if you think this mom needs to be on the monitor, you need to be at the hospital. So all our moms are intermittently monitored. Even at 42-plus weeks, even with meconium, even with the occasional variable, even with mildly elevated blood pressures, many of these criteria will preclude a woman from intermittent monitoring protocols in the hospital. They tend to be much more stringent. And boy, you know, it's really remarkable when we transfer from the birth center to the hospital and mom goes on the machine, the focus goes off mom and right onto the monitor. So the intermittent monitoring really does keep the focus on mom and helping her get through labor. Our families have incredible support, partners, friends, aunts, cousins, family. Many of our families hire doulas to be with them during labor. I love having a doula. First of all, it makes my job so much easier. And second of all, doulas do a fantastic job of keeping moms home in early labor. They do a great job of reading those signs of, you know, when that labor has gone from early labor to active labor and when it's time to come in. I tell our moms, you know, I do not want to be staring at you for 12 hours while you're 2 centimeters. It's going to make me want to do stuff that does not need to be done. You need to be at home. I did come across in my literature search, I did come up with a number of articles to support exactly what I want to believe here. I didn't attach a bib, but I'm happy to share them if anybody wants them. But there was an article for a lay doula training program, which I thought was just a fabulous idea. It sounded like so much fun. It was an inner city hospital with a lot of young women giving birth, and they offered this training class for friends or cousins to get some extra birth support training, and they showed a clear correlation that when the lay doula was there, that more of them delivered vaginally. Our moms have to take childbirth education. The very few that can't or won't or don't for whatever reason, many times we end up at the hospital. They just do not have the tools and support they need to get through, a natural birth. All right, slide. Thanks. So now at the day-to-day level, tricks and techniques that we use to help get moms through labor, we get really, really good at Leopold's. We need to know how that baby is oriented in there so we know what to expect, how to counsel mom, and how to help. We know those ROA babies come the fastest. Water breaks and poof, out they come, even in primips. LOA babies come fast but not as fast. And the LOT, LOP babies take days. They take forever. We expect that, and we work with the mom. This Labor Progress Handbook by Penny Simkin and Ruth Anchetta is the Bible here. Anybody who attends Women in Labor should read it. She goes through any number of positions, the rationales as to how they help and how to prevent labor dystocia. It's really a great book. We utilize, you know, all of the different positions she talks about and a few of our own, stairs two at a time, lunging, walking, birth balls. We have a little pole dancing routine. We have moms do in the shower to try and rotate posterior babies. Is the research fantastic that, you know, all these positions help? I think it would be difficult to get a really, really great studies anyway, but, you know, at the very least, you have families and providers engaged in supporting mom and working with her, and you're biding time, and really, if that's all you need, that's fine by me. Belly binding, I'm going to show you a picture on the next slide. That involves taking a draw sheet and folding it in a band about 12 inches and tying it on her lower abdomen around her back really, really firmly, sort of like a maternity belt, but much stronger. And it's great for helping OP babies to rotate, and it's really, really fabulous for helping moms with a pendulous abdomen, either from grand mal tuparity or the mom that's had her babies a few in short order, and she just has very lax abdominal tone. That head might be overriding the symphysis. And this belly binding helps so much. It's one of the things I'm really glad that I know to get that little head down into the pelvis and get labor established. I've seen it work a number of times in a mom that's trying to get herself into labor, but contractions aren't regular. And we'll sweep her membranes, bind up her belly, send her walking, and usually within 3 or 4 hours, she's active. We have a TENS unit, the transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, the little sticky pads, usually for back pain, 2 pads above the site of the pain and 2 below, usually down on the sacrum. That gives moms some really good relief of back pain. And then ramping that up a notch is the sterile water papules. Excuse me. Sterile water papules involve injecting 0.1 mLs of sterile water, not saline, sterile water intradermally. You want an intradermal wheel like when you get your tuberculin test. It's not subcutaneous. It won't work. It gives women just incredible relief from their back pain. Most women, I think at least 75-80% in my own personal estimation, for 45 to 90 minutes. It can be repeated during labor. The most I've given it in labor is 3 times, and it has, you know, worked really well. It does sting like the dickens going in. What I usually do is hand mom a face cloth to bite and tell her it's going to feel like she's being attacked by killer bees. But if she can get through that 20 seconds of intense stinging, that the pain relief is worth it. We do use pain medicines judiciously. Most of the time we're using pain meds. It's an early labor for rest, but the occasional mom does need a little some to get her through in the active phase of labor. We use Nubain and Phenergan. As far as what we do in second stage, we allow second stage to proceed without time limits as long as mom and baby are okay, and we're seeing progress. This position that I'm calling the Darcy, I think Maureen Darcy invented it. Maybe somebody taught it to her, but it is a really great position. You can go ahead and advance, Kate. This first one, this is my very accommodating neighbor, Melissa, who agreed to pose for this. This position is fantastic for getting out that stuck OP baby or asynclitic baby, and really all else has failed. When we're using it at the birth center, it's because we're looking at a transfer. I have used this at the hospital, even with an epidural. It takes some finagling to kind of get the labor bed, get mom and dad like that on the labor bed. But the important things to sort of notice about this position is that mom's bottom is dangling between dad's legs. Her legs are on the outside of his legs. She's hyperflexing her thighs up onto her belly. Usually we can get somebody under each foot to help support her legs. And then if you can see dad's hands there, right above her symphysis doing a belly lift. And this position is really effective in getting babies out that you otherwise might not get out. I had a mama about 2 weeks ago, a multip, and her baby should have come flying out. Her pelvis was wonderful. Her first baby was 9 pounds. We knew this one was big. And we pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed for well over an hour and finally had to try this position. And, you know, out comes her 9-pound, 13-ounce direct OP deflexed little baby head. Moms do tend to bleed more in these upright positions, but I feel like that we can manage with a little pit inside a tech if need be, and at least we got a baby out. This next picture shows the location of where you would put the sterile water papules. I'm not sure that it needs to be exact, but usually in this general vicinity. And then this last picture illustrates the belly binding. What you want is that sheet tied really, really tightly to help lift that belly up. So I hope that you found this information useful, if not useful, at least interesting, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And thanks again for having me. I feel really honored that you were that you wanted my perspective as you're working toward this very lofty goal.